You more of your favorite public radio programs. It's easy. Here's how to get started. You can call our vehicle donation support team at 888-593-7288. Available 7 days a week to take your call at 888-593-7288 and donate. This is Megan, KCFR, production assistant.
And Ray Lager, underwriting director at KCFR.
Hey, Ray. You know what time it is?
Yes, it's time to vote in the Chico News and Review Best of Chico.
That's right. CNR is happy to announce the return of Best of Chico. Voting is live at bestofchico.com. And you can vote for your favorite businesses, eateries, bands, and more.
That's right. And let's not forget, you can vote for your favorite radio station, KCFR. And our wonderful underwriters who help keep the Zephyr live and local.
Voting is simple. Just log in and get started.
For a complete list of KCFR underwriters, go to kcfr.org, click on the Underwriters tab, and you'll find logo links to all of our current supporters.
So tell your friends, vote for Best of Chico.
And don't forget, vote for your favorite community radio station, KCFR.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Ecotopia. We'll be talking with Stacy Ware and Gerard Ungerman of Respectful Revolution, who have prepared a new film called Lost and Found in the Park.
As we roll down this unfamiliar road, and although this wave is stringing us along, just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place yours.
This is KZFR 90.1 in Chico, and you are listening to Ecotopia, a weekly program exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological.
Tonight we'll be talking with Gerard Ungerman and Stacy Ware. They are founders of Respectful Revolution and creative of a new film called Lost and Found in the Park, Finding Community in Chico's Houseless Camps.
The film includes interviews with 9 residents of Chico's houseless communities in Tiger Pond and Comanche Creek. It's an eye-opening film, and you can view it.
Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico's Certified Farmers Markets, featuring 3 markets in Butte County. Year-round markets in Chico at the North Valley Plaza on Wednesday morning, and a 3rd and Wall on downtown Chico on Saturday morning. There's also a seasonal market in Paradise on Tuesday morning. Chico's Certified Farmers Markets, connecting farmers and food lovers since 1980. And we're also supported by the Forbay Aquatic Center at 930 Garden Drive in Oroville. The Aquatic Center is open Tuesday through Sunday, rents kayaks, stand-up paddle boards, and more. And there are summer camps, classes, a facility rental for private events, and they have a beach. Details at forbayaquaticcenter.com. The opinions voiced on Ecotopia do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, or volunteers. We'll be right back to talk with Gerard and Stacy about their film.
Stretching out below the land, blessed motherland, the place where I was born. Scars, yeah, she's got her scars. Sometimes it starts to worry me, 'cause lose, I don't wanna lose the sight of who we are. From the mountain to the wave-crashed coast, there's a way to find better days. I know it's been a long, hard ride, got a ways to go, but this is still the place that we all. Nothing feels like free, though it sometimes means we don't get along. 'Cause same, no, we're not the same, but that's what makes us strong. From the mountains high to the wave-crashed coast, there's a way to find better days. That dream across the sea. Names, then they sign their names for something they need. Red, how the blood ran red. We laid our dead in sacred ground. Just think, wonder what they meant if they could see us now. It's been a long, hard.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, technological. And our guests tonight are good friends Stacy Ware and Gerard Ungerman. They're filmmakers, founders of Respectful Revolution, creators of a new film, Lost and Found in the Park, Finding Community in Chico's Houseless Camps. which they co-produced with the Chico Housing Action Team. Welcome, Gerard and Stacy.
Hi, Susan.
Thank you.
Hi.
Nice to hear you. Hear you both. We're just checking sound levels there to make sure that. So, we want to spend a lot of time this afternoon talking with you about the film, which we very much appreciated. First, though, we'd like to hear what brought you to this particular film and a little bit of the history of Respectful Revolution. How did Respectful Revolution come about?
Well, you know, in a nutshell, I had been doing documentary films already since 1995, focusing a lot on war situations and social problems. And Stacy, she can, you know, also explain. She had been involved in KZFR, as a matter of fact, for a number of years. And we came together with the idea to give a platform to people offering solutions to problems, as opposed to just looking at problems. We thought, okay, now we know a lot of things. Now it's high time to look at solutions. And that was really the essence of coming together to do Respectful Revolution.
Respectful Revolution was an enormously ambitious project, and we really want to get to the film, but can you just give us a few highlights about Respectful Revolution's work and some of the most important things that you took away from doing that?
Well, the project started in 2012, and its first iteration was really mostly Gerard out on the road on his motorcycle, crisscrossing the country, gathering content, stories of individuals, for the most part, who had been compelled into positive action around some issue that meant something to them. And so we would gather content for these sort of short format, grassroots style stories on people from all around the country, like I said. And then Gerard would bring that content home. Sometimes he would be out on the road for 2 months. One time he was gone for almost 4 months. And brought home 100 stories.
Wow.
From that trip, which we will never do again because we literally were editing for 2 years. So, you know, we learned a valuable lesson there. But we certainly have covered a lot of topics. Everything from environmental to interpersonal to art to, I mean, everything you could think of, really. But the one unifying factor is people taking positive action, you know, in order to make the world a better place. And as a result, we've really learned a lot about solutions that exist out there in the world. And I think to answer that second part of your question, Susan, for me, the one thing, my big takeaway after doing this work is that the solutions to our challenges exist now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're out there. In many, many, many cases, it's a matter of scaling up. But the solutions exist and need to be implemented.
And these are fabulous videos. Listeners, if you haven't had a chance to see them, we'll ask Stacy and Gerard to give us the web link, the YouTube link at the close of the program. But these are inspiring videos.
So how did Respectful Revolution come to work with CHAT, the Chico Action Housing Team? How did this film come about?
Well, you know, it's definitely quite an endeavor to hit the road for extended period of time and bring back stories, and then you have to spend months, years to edit all the stories. And so we wanted to also do local work, and that's what we started doing. You know, being here, we would intersperse shooting and editing a local story as we were editing stories from, you know, Kansas or what have you. And so we naturally, of course, came across the fantastic work of the Chico Housing Action Team. And this is how, and I don't remember exactly what was the first story that we did with them, but we immediately struck a friendship with the founders of the organization. Online in particular, and at public events, they were missing a component that is video in your promotion, and we thought that it's something that we would love to do for them, and so we started doing a couple of stories. We thought about, particularly at the beginning, a big idea was to go look again at solutions elsewhere and bring back the examples to show them, as opposed to making people, guess and imagine what a solution could be, where it could come to housing people with very little means. We would go travel, in this case, up and down the West Coast, and look at examples of tiny house villages, for instance, or other types of economic housing situation for people who are houseless. Mm-hmm. And this is how we really started our partnership and collaboration, and that's been very fruitful and very exciting from the beginning.
And maybe you could just say, most people in Chico know about the work of CHAT. They're in the news a lot, but for people who maybe are new or listening from far away, could you just say a couple words about the work of CHAT? More than two.
It would be impossible to sum up in two words.
Yeah, right, I know.
Yeah, they're still mainly a volunteer-driven local organization in Chico. So CHAT stands for the Chico Housing Action Team. They started with Safe Space. Bob Trausch and his wife Leslie Johnson and a couple other key people. I think the story goes is they ran into somebody one winter about 6.5 years ago who was probably going to freeze to death on the streets of Chico if they didn't get shelter that night. And that just really stuck with them, and they just thought, we can't keep allowing this to happen. And so that's when they started Safe Space during the winters, and CHAT kind of grew out from that to the organization that it is now, where they are housing, I think at last count, it was about 170 people, mm-hmm. In 60-some-odd places. They have a lot of programs. They have about 8 different programs, a food program, a warehouse program for goods, the Housing Now program, where they're housing people, Campfire, the Hush program, Housing Up for families. Yeah, they've got, I think, 8 programs is what we counted. We did the video on it. And they're just growing all the time. They're an incredible organization that has done so much in a short amount of time, mostly volunteer-driven, almost 100% donation-driven. And they, to our minds, like for our work, which is solution-based video content, they're a perfect fit because they are action-oriented, totally implementing solutions that I think can be taken from our community of Chico and reworked and implemented in any community, I would say anywhere in the world.
Yeah. Let's get to the original conception of the film. What were your aims and goals or your vision of the final product?
Well, I think this particular film, Lost and Found in the Park, came as a result of an opportunity. We had been thinking for a while of giving the microphone to people who are actually on the street, mm-hmm. as opposed to just hearing about them by people who are housed, whether they're activists, social workers, or local politicians, or detractors, or what have you. And it was always very difficult to be able to get more than vague sound bites, because to get really in-depth, very, you know, interesting interviews. People have to know you. They have to trust you. You have to spend time with them. You can't just show up with your smile on the camera and expect something, you know. You have to spend time. And that was always very difficult when people, you know, they spend the night on a street corner and the next day, God knows where they are. And so with COVID, with the previous administration, I mean, the city council, a policy of sheltering in place was put in place where people were able to stay in their tents, in camps, especially in parks in Chico. So this basically allowed for the possibility of going somewhere, meeting people, and then going back, you know, and seeing them again, you know, spending time, and eventually even camping, you know, with them, which was not possible before. Of course, the council has changed, and the policy, you know, was sort of removed, and they started to be evicted again. But then there was a situation, you know, I don't know if you want to go in depth in this, but anyway, a legal injunction was placed where the city could not evict people anymore. They were able to stay again. And that we thought, okay, now is the time. We have to seize this opportunity to get to be able to do these in-depth interviews.
So you ended up interviewing 9 houseless people from the camps in Tiger Ponds and Comanche Creek. How did you decide on those locations? That's where people were, and those particular people.
Well, that was, you know, the camps sort of appeared of under their own, you know, energy, and so those were the obvious places to go, first of all. And also Gerard had, you know, sort of befriended and begun a relationship with a few people that he had met during the sweeps. And so we kind of wanted to find them and find where they were. And so some of those people, I think actually most all of those folks, like Lucan and Clinton, who you meet in the film, ended up at Tykert. And then spending time at Comanche, we just kind of got to know a few people there. And this, you know, this idea of going there and meeting them over time was one thing, but then there was also this idea of going and staying there and camping overnight, which was an idea that that previously Gerard had been discussing with Scott Huber.
Right. I remember when Scott
on City Council, and that was kind of a plan that was going to happen. Scheduling and stuff was difficult, and Scott was there a lot. You know, he really wanted to figure this out and learn on the ground. Right. And talk to people, and he did.
Yes,
but he never ended up camping with Gerard or with us. We just did that on our own. And so the people that you meet in the film were people that we had known that Gerard had met during the sweeps, or people that we got to know by spending time multiple days and a couple overnights in those locations. And these are people who are willing to talk.
So,
you know, because not everybody is.
Yeah, I want to ask about that a little bit more. But there's one scene in the film where a couple of guys are raking and yes, clearing off a piece of ground, and you said that's for our tent. So did you say we would like to come and camp with you? I'm so curious about how you approach this. We'd like to come and camp with you. Is there a good place to put our tent? Or how did you go about that?
Well, just asking people that we had been spending time with, and all of them, I mean, they were enthusiastic. The idea that somebody, you know, from the house world, whatever that means, would want to spend time with them when there's so much, you know, fear and almost because of fear around, you know, the camps and being houseless. So the reaction was, oh, yes, of course, please come. you know, and we were welcomed with open arms, you know, really. And I think that that was very touching to see the efforts that, especially these two men that you know, we know quite well, deployed to make sure that we would have a spot without rocks, without debris under our tents. You know, they were adamant in clearing it, and it was, you know, the way to welcome us, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, we didn't ask them to make a space for us.
No. Could you please?
They did that.
Make my life easier, please. This is, I don't usually go out here and camp, so, yeah. Okay.
You had one person who was willing to be interviewed, but she didn't want her face on film. Could you explain how that came about?
Yeah, Sharon. Do you want to talk about that, Gerard?
Yeah, Sharon is a character. Sharon is known, you know, she's definitely a long-term person on the street. And she's known in town, and it's kind of interesting because she's typically very talkative. Sometimes she's not so much, but she, you know, I heard so after spending some time with her, at first she didn't want to talk on camera, and then, you know, she started seeing that we had interviewed a lady, Christine James, living next to her. She likes Christine. She saw the process. She saw the result, and she thought she trusted us that we would, you know, really be truthful to her statement, so she accepted to do this. And the funny thing is, the reason why she didn't want to show her face, she was ashamed around her father. Imagine that. And I don't even know if her father's still around, by the way, an old man, but she had shame around this. She didn't want her father to see her. So that's the reason why she asked to have her face a bit obscured.
Oh, man. So,
yeah, I really appreciated Sharon. She was, well, they all are. All of the people that spoke to us and ended up being in the film are so open about their lives and their situation. And Sharon, I think, more than anyone, I mean, she openly talks about her addiction issues and spending time in prison, and that her son is also struggling with drug addiction issues. And she's just she was very open about it. And she's not, certainly not, you know, proud of where she is. She's just trying her best, you know? And like she says, and I think one very poignant moment where she starts to cry and says she just wishes there was an instant cure. She just obviously can't get out from under it right now.
So how much time did you have to spend there to gain people's trust? I mean, Gerard was spending time and then you started camping. So how much time were you actually kind of in the field as you were starting to and then recording these interviews?
Well, the first people we met for this were doing sweeps, which I believe the 1 month...
That was in January.
Probably in January.
Really?
I want to say, if I'm not mistaken. So I started developing a relationship, especially with Lucille and Clinton, from this moment on, and I followed them, you know. And give or take, I think the process took about 3 months to start meeting people, talking with them, seeing them again, following them. Like in the case of Clinton and Lucille, I interviewed them, you know, several times in different situations. And then they turned us on to some of their friends who trusted us because they trusted us, you know. So it's definitely something that has developed over the course of several months. And then, of course, there's a time of obviously editing after, where we went back sometimes to get more stuff.
Okay.
So the whole process stretched, I would say, over almost 6 months.
I'm sorry,
almost 6 months.
Wow. And did you stay camping for a chunk of time? And what was that experience like? Were you kind of part of the community at that place? Did people see you? And
we only camped actually We spent one night in Packer and one night in Comanche, so it was not very, very long.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot of time.
Okay. Other than that, you know, going there, spending, you know, sometimes hours. So the actual camping itself was not very long. It was kind of more symbolic in a sense. It was
mm-hmm. also, yeah, I get
for,
that.
For some people, it was a really kind of a little bit of
kind
a
of and kind of not.
Afraid and that we trusted them, you know.
As you can tell, we're fascinated by the process. You're camping, you're meeting with people. But let's do a transition now to the content of the film itself. It takes on a number of issues related to houseless people, including, as you show early in the film, health problems, drug problems, being criminals. Tell us a bit about what you learned and how you extracted that from the interviews and put it into the film.
Those were pointed questions that were asked. Sorry, Jared. You want to answer that?
No, no, you can start, I can continue.
Okay. I'll just say, those, in a lot of cases, were pointed questions that we asked because we saw the three main negative, challenging stereotypes that we cover in the film, crime, mental illness and drug use, as three very loud concepts that you hear in the narrative that's being created about unhoused people. So we wanted to ask them about that. I mean, these things are obviously a reality, more so for them than anyone else that's being affected out in the community. And we wanted to talk to them about those things pointedly. So we asked about them. And then sometimes it would come up just in the course of a conversation. There was a lot more that could have been included. But for the sake of time, I mean, one interview one day with one of the fellows who's very talkative and also very entertaining to listen to. I think was, correct me if I'm wrong, Gerard, but I think tape ran for 2.5 hours straight.
Yes,
wow.
Yeah, that sounds like that was just one conversation.
Was that
on
Smiley?
One particular day. And from that we extracted, okay. You know, the bulk of his interview.
I heard pretty mixed messages, maybe not about crime, but about mental illness and about drug addiction and drug use. Some people were more adamant about the mental health issues. How did you assess that on the basis of your time there? And where do you think the film comes down on those two issues?
Well, as you know, Stacey likes to say, and you know, she can continue and develop this. It's a situation where, you know, first of all, you could easily make the case that we are all of us human beings alive today. We all, you know, we all have our little quirks and, you know, issues. And so it doesn't take much for starter. And then once you're put in a situation of so much stress, you know, when you've lost everything, you find yourself on the street, you're in a constant, constant danger situation. People on the street are constantly being, you know, robbed, mugged, attacked somehow, or harassed by police, or being, you know, now attacked by kids who play zombie with them, shooting them with BB guns, or have you. You know, the stress is enormous. And so I defy anybody, you know, even the most zen person to spend time in such circumstances to not start losing their mind.
Yeah.
You know, and
right.
so it's something that definitely has to be factored in. It's impossible to live in such situations and not, you know, being affected in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we didn't, like, it wasn't our intent to come down on any, like,
right.
anywhere mm-hmm. with those issues. The intent was to offer a platform to hear from people who are actually living this life.
Right.
There's this narrative that's being created by all of us that aren't living there, you know, whether it's media or advocates or right. anti-homelessness advocates, surely are driving a big part of the narrative, you know, misinformed as they often are. And politicians, you know, all of us are creating this narrative, and we rarely get to hear directly
right.
from
mm-hmm.
the people that we're talking about.
Right.
So really, that was the main
right.
hope of the film, was to offer an honest narrative coming from those people. But I think that where what we saw in the course of creating the film was that these issues absolutely exist, and that there's a reason that these issues exist, and it's not because these are faulty people.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole bunch of things that have happened in a life that were you or I to live that life, we would be in the exact same place.
Mm. Mm-hmm. People talked about the reasons, the many reasons for being homeless. What did they have to say about that?
Well, that's one thing that we definitely, if there's one take that people should come out of watching this film and other such films, you know, it's the fact that there's not such a thing as a homeless. You know, I like to say homeless is an adjective, don't make it a noun. But if you make it a noun, now you throw the same category, dozens of cases that have nothing to do with one another. You know, the people can be homeless mm-hmm. for so many reasons. You know, there are people who are runaway teenagers, there are retired people who cannot find anything to live,
mm-hmm.
you know, for $900,000 of Social Security retirement, you know, per month. There are people who are mentally ill, have no families to take care of them. There are people who indeed have destroyed their lives with an addiction. There are, you know, people who make the choice
whose houses burn down
to save money.
Right.
I'm sorry?
Whose houses burn down.
And there are people whose houses burn down.
People whose houses yeah. burn down, absolutely. And you know, do not have not collected insurance or what have you, you know, yet, like some people we interviewed. And some people make the conscious choice that they want to be able to save their money to be able to buy something. And they know that with the current, you know, outrageous cost of housing, they will never be able in their lifetime to afford anything. And so they figure out ways to save their money. You know, it's astonishing the very of cases out there.
I was impressed by the people who said, once they became homeless, they said, I don't want to give any more money to landlords or banks. I'd rather not pay into that kind of corporate establishment.
Yeah, that's a thing. Go ahead, Gerard.
it's a situation also where we are obliged to recognize that there's not, you know, houselessness, homelessness, whatever you want to call it. It's not a binary situation where you are in the camp of the zero, the camp of the one. It's a spectrum. You know, how do you qualify people who are permanent RVists, who live in the RVs permanently? You know, van dwellers, where do you put them in this equation? People who camp, you know, permanently, are they homeless? You know,
it's, yeah, right.
to a degree, you could say, well, you know, if you don't have a regular apartment or house that you live in, then therefore you're a houseless or homeless person. And, well, maybe, you know, what constitutes, you know, homelessness? And I think that sort of forces us to realize that we're in a situation today where the cost of housing is outrageous. Not everybody can afford, is either willing or able to afford to play into this game. And we need to find solutions because, you know, the number of people out there, whether out of their choices or inabilities to do otherwise, it's horrendous. We have to do something.
Right. We found the film deeply affecting. Both of us really appreciated hearing from the people that you've talked to. And we wondered what the emotional impact, I mean, you sort of showed what the emotional impact was on you, Gerard. We have to do something about it. So tell us about how you felt about this work and how you feel as a result of having done this work.
Well, do you want to answer a bit to that, Stacey?
Yeah, I mean, I think we both can, if that's okay.
Yeah, I'd like to hear from both of you.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think for one thing, we made friends. You know, we discovered some people who are definitely interesting. You know, their characters, they're sort of attaching. You know, so that's one strong emotional takeaway from it, I suppose. And also, you know, for us, we realize the breadth of the problem and the fact that it comes home. I mean, so many people couldn't have been without a home. So many people, and it's even our own case. I mean, working with a kind of non-profit organization that we do and doing the kind of work that we do, it's extremely time-consuming. I mean, anybody who's done any kind of video editing knows how much time this takes. It's not a 9-to-5, you know. You sometimes begin your work at 7, 8 in the morning and you're not done at midnight, you know. So it's an enormous amount of work that, especially when you work with non-profit organizations, there's not very much money to be made, you know. We end up making per hour amount that we can't even say because people would be shocked, you know. And so for us, the perspective of not being able to afford a regular mainstream commercial housing, it's over our head like a Damocles sword, you know. So it comes home to us, you know. It's a strange, I guess, pun, if you will. But it felt very... It's something which is part of our own reality. So we feel concerned, you know. We feel totally implicated in this reflection.
Mm-hmm. Stacey?
Yeah, I think for me, the emotional takeaway from this is just, you know, there are things that were revealed to me and things that were solidified. One of the things that was solidified was that we all need each other, and how the ability to congregate in these two parks is now creating an opportunity for folks that normally wouldn't be able to create community, and how beneficial that is. I happen to believe that, like, this next shift, whatever it is that we hopefully as human beings are moving into, collaboration is the fulcrum of everything that needs to come from now. And so that was really solidified for me, and, you know, how thankful I am for my friends and my family. I won't, for now, slip through the cracks, you know, which has really been the experience for a lot of these folks. And also just the unrelenting need that's out there right now, and how this is not going to be stopping anytime soon. We've just lost at least another community nearby, for example, Greenville. And in the homes that are being lost now, it's like, where are these people going to go?
Right.
I mean, I think you saw in the film, we put up a tile that, you know, 14,000 homes in the campfire were lost, and at the time that we were editing that piece, there was something like 400 and something permits that had been issued out of 14,000 homes.
Right, yeah.
So some of those people have moved on, and some of them haven't.
Yep.
And are here in camps. So, yeah, we need to figure this out. So there's that, you know, really like looming sort of overwhelm that I came away with. But really just the personal, like, what can I do myself? I know that now I'm not going to be able to fix this problem, obviously, by myself, no matter how many videos I help make, or how much work I do for chat, or how many things I volunteer for. It's going to take all of us, and it's going to take all of us caring for one another and to keep showing up, you know, even when things fall apart. But that there are things that can be done. These folks aren't asking for the moon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, they just need some help. You know, a little help. And I think that the really exciting part for me in this film is that they have ideas about what would help them.
Yes, and
you know,
always...
Yeah, go ahead, Susan.
Well, it's always been really interesting to me that they're not in city council meetings talking about here's what we need, and they're not being, their advice about what do you need is not being solicited by any government group that I've ever heard about. I you know, there are some advocacy groups that are asking them, but their voices are so silent in this whole issue. You know, I mean, there have been some things in the Enterprise Record. What's her name did some visiting on the camps and told some stories. I can't say the reporter's
name.
Natalie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then your film, but there you hear so little from the people who are affected.
Yeah, and they have some ideas and solutions, and they're just speaking for themselves, but you definitely start to hear some commonality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there are, and like Gerard said earlier, one idea isn't going to address everything because it is a spectrum of people with a spectrum of issues and a spectrum of situations.
Yes.
Some of them have no money at all.
Yes.
Like none. And many, many of them, which is something I learned, have a little bit of income.
Mm-hmm.
And would be willing to pay for example, a sanctioned campground that is managed, where stabilized,
right,
and have a place to call home,
right,
you know, and services could then be brought to them instead of them having to fan out into the community and figure it all out for themselves. I mean, how do you, you should hear, like, Amber tell us off camera about how her trying to get her car re-registered.
She's the younger woman? Was that Amber?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
She's wearing a mask.
Right, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just one thing after another. I mean, most of these people don't... I don't know if you've ever lived outdoors for a while, but just to have your cell phone charged is like a constant.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You are spending 50% of your day.
Yeah.
Just on trying to figure out and gather the basic resources necessary to continue on to a next day.
Yeah.
And the whole thing could just fall apart at any minute.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the cops could show up.
Yeah.
Someone could get sick.
Were they still traumatized by the sweeps?
I would say yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say yes. They were kind of starting to relax, but then someone would come in and say, oh, this is going to end, and they might, because there was a time just recently where maybe the judge wasn't going to uphold the
that
order.
Needs to
I can't really remember, but yeah, absolutely. And it's not just that sweep. These are people that have been, if they've been outdoors for any length of time at all, they've been swept.
Exactly.
And lost their stuff.
Right.
What little things they have multiple times. It's just, you cannot, it's, to use a metaphor, you are constantly sleeping with one eye open.
Yeah.
And not just from the sweeps, but with, for people coming, you know, they're subjected to crime
thieves.
More often
than
any of us could ever realize.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's, you're definitely sleeping with one eye open. Can we talk about sleep deprivation and what that does to a person?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about you, Susan, but
need my
sleep. I certainly wouldn't last long.
Do you see any movement either on the part of the city or the agencies
county?
Of setting up the sanctioned campground that people need? I was struck in the film, your long shots of Comanche Creek looked a little bit pastoral. I mean, you did show trash sites, but if you look down that long corridor, How far is that removed from what a sanctioned campground could look like? I guess that was two questions. Is the city going to do anything?
I hope that's a really important part of whatever is created, and I hope something is created. And for goodness sakes, I hope there's trees.
Yes.
Because I'll tell you that monstrosity that was created out at the airport.
That was insane. Oh, yeah. Just insane.
Was insane. I mean, Gerard, it's not shown in the film. We actually changed the ending of the film so as not to be antagonistic. And I think we're left with a more pure film, you know, instead of our opinion being plastered on at the end of the film. But there was a very powerful juxtaposition just visually of us moving in one moment from Comanche and especially Tigert, which is beautiful and green and quiet to the airport facility, which was none of those things.
Yes, right.
And it was so inhospitable, literally right on the runway. So hot on the day that Gerard filmed up there. He had I wasn't with him this day. He went up with a temperature gauge that has an indoor and outdoor. Mm-hmm. It does both. Like, you set your little sensor wherever you want it. And under the shade tent, in the shade structure, which was there for protection, was 106 degrees.
Oh, my God.
And outside on the tarmac area where people were, where it was all lined out and people were expected to either put their car, RV, or their tent, it was 122 degrees.
Oh, my God. That's not livable.
People would literally
die.
So, I mean, this was... So anyway, we ended up not including that in the film, but the juxtaposition that you're talking about, Stephen, with that pastoral green... You know, I hope that's part... None of us want folks to have to live in the park.
Right.
Like, we're not saying that's what we want, and that's not what chat wants, and I don't think that's what anyone working so hard on these issues and the advocacy part of things wants, because we, you know, the parks are for public use, for everybody to enjoy. But there's really nowhere for these people to go right now. And how about we find somewhere for them to be? And we can restore the park spaces.
Yes.
And offer them a place to stabilize, bring services to them. A lot of them, I'm no expert, you know, Gerard and I aren't experts on any of this. We've just been learning along with everyone else in doing this film and in working with chat. There are lots of experts that have been working on this for a lot longer than we have out in this, you know, our community of Chico and elsewhere. But if we offer them a place to be and stabilize them, there's going to be a lot of those folks that I would dare say could stabilize and transition out.
Wow.
And then, guess what? They're not homeless anymore.
Right, yeah.
Like, I mean, not that all of the problems of their life will be solved, but there's a huge bunch of them that can be addressed and bettered, for sure, if they don't have to live in constant fear and instability.
I think I understand more about the title after having talked to you for this little bit of time. The finding community I could see in the film, but why Lost and Found?
Well, lost, it's because I think you can make an easy case that a lot of people on some level are lost. You know, they lost all their lives, their entire, you know, previous lives, and they're in predicaments which qualify for being lost. But then they, you know, by the fact of being able to get stabilized somewhere and being able to create healthy rapport with their neighbors and make friends and, you know, establish relationship, then they find themselves. They find themselves again. You know, they find, you know, friendship. They find, you know, an element of respect. They find an identity little by little, you know, again. And so for us, it was a way to convey this idea that if you let people be somewhere, you give them a little bit of stability and safety, they're going to find their lives again. You know, so that's really the rationale behind the title Lost and Found in the Park.
How can people help? How can they help people who are houseless? How can they support Respectful Revolution, which is creating insights and bringing it to people? And how can they support CHAT?
That is a big question.
There are a bunch of them. There are several questions.
There's a lot of things to support there. CHAT, definitely go onto their website, and they have lots of suggestions as far as financial donations, which is obviously a huge part of this, especially in a time and in a community where solutions are not being very funded. The CHAT website is a great place to go. There's volunteer opportunities, there's donation opportunities, and a lot of information about their different programs that you can either support or get involved with. And as far as how to help the houseless population in Chico, there are a few groups where once I think you plug in with one, for example, CHAT, or maybe the Hunger Trolley, or Butte Shelter for All, or Caring Choices. There's so many organizations. I'm forgetting some really key ones right now, but there are so many helpers helping in town that I really think that's a great way to get involved, because the thing is already set up, you know, and you can just sort of plug in as you can.
Right. And
Gerard, do you want to talk about
quickly how to support Respectful Revolution? We're almost out of time.
You can go to respectfulrevolution.org. You can also, the films are up on your YouTube channel, including this film, plus a number of the films that you did for CHAT. How do people get to the YouTube channel? Do they just Google Respectful Revolution and there they are?
You can do a search on YouTube for Respectful Revolution. So we've added an advertisement on our video, so that's a little bit of support as well. Everything helps. We can certainly get in contact with us, Gerard or Stacy at respectfulrevolution.org, and we will tell them how they can help us further. I think at this point, the continuity of our work, we have to do with affordable housing, affordable living.
Yes.
We're going to look in the coming months and years probably at how people are finding solutions to the outrageous cost of living at this point, especially, housing. And so it's something where we are going to offer solutions not just to people who are currently on the street or on the verge of being on the street, but to anybody who wants to be able to save, a bit of money, being able to maybe go back to school, maybe, travel. At this point, a lot of people are paying half or more of their income into housing. And to us, this is of high, high detriment to society, because, the economy will suffer from that. There'll be less people buying less things, traveling less, going less to school. And so this work to us that we are about to start is really of service to a very broad segment of the population. But we cannot do it on our own, especially where it comes to funding, because we rely a lot on donations. So again, anybody with any interest in this line of work, in these questions, we encourage them to get in touch with us through our website or email Gerard or Stacy at respectfulrevolution.org, and we will tell them how they can help us best.
Thank you so much, Stacy Ware and Gerard Ungerman, for all of the positive work you've done for years in creating beautiful and uplifting and solution-based films. And thanks for this new work, Lost and Found in the Park, Finding Community in Chico's Houseless Community. And thanks for taking the time to be with us. This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico. Thanks, guys.
Thank you,
Stephen and Susan. Same goes to you.
Great, thank you. That's a wrap for Ecotopia for tonight. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, it's North State Give and Take with Bobby Tryon. Next week on Ecotopia, we'll have a return visit with Julie Heath, who will talk with us about agriculture's role in decreasing CO2 and sequestering carbon. Thanks for listening.
You are the new day. If you can but prove to me you are the new day, send the sun in time for dawn, let the birds all hail the morning, love of life will urge me say, knowing we must bear, thoughts occur that this night might stay yesterday.
Up next is North State Give and Take, and it's made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothes and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers in the heart of downtown Chico. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years and is located at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers complimentary gift wrapping with each purchase. More information by calling the Cotton Party at 893-4923 and by the Printed Image, providing screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. The Printed Image is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and by appointment. More information by calling them at 898-9525.